The first one is from the Old Testament, Job chapter 12, 7 through 25. The Message. But ask the animals what they think. Let them teach you. Let the birds tell you what's going on. Put your ear to the earth. Learn the basics. Listen. The fish in the ocean will tell you their stories. Isn't it clear that they all know and agree that God is sovereign, that he holds all things in his hand? Every living soul, yes, every breathing creature. Isn't this all just common sense, as common as the sense of taste? Do you think the elderly have a corner on wisdom? That you have to grow old before you understand life? Quote, true wisdom and real power belong to God. From him we learn how to live and also what to live for. The gospel reading is from Matthew chapter 20, also from the Message, and it's verses 1 through 16. God's kingdom is like an estate manager who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. They agreed on a wage of $1 a day and went to work. Later, about 9 o'clock, the manager saw some other men hanging around the town square, unemployed. He told them to go to work in his vineyard, and he would pay them a fair wage. They went. He did the same thing at noon, and again at 3 o'clock. At 5 o'clock, he went back and found still others standing around. He said, "Why are you standing around all day doing nothing?" They said, "Because no one hired us." He told them to go to work in his vineyard. When the day's work was over, the owner of the vineyard instructed his foreman, "Call the workers in and pay them their wages. Start with the last hired and go on to the first." Those hired at 5 o'clock came up and were each given $1. When those who were hired first saw that, they assumed they would get far more. But they got the same, each of them, $1. Taking the dollar, they groused angrily to the manager. "These last workers put in only one easy hour, and you just made them equal to us, who slaved all day under a scorching sun." He replied to the one speaking for the rest, "Friend, I haven't been unfair. We agreed on the wage of $1, didn't we? So take it and go. I decided to give to the ones who came last the same as you. Can't I do what I want with my own money? Are you going to get stingy because I am generous?" Here it is again, the great reversal, many of the first ending up last and the last first.
The great reversal, which happens in every parable, what you think is going to happen, the opposite happens. You have made them equal to us. We all need what we need to survive. Would you pray with me? Holy God, help us this morning. Help us to find or discover or be open to maybe a nugget or maybe a piece of your truth or a connection to our lives or maybe a way that there could be a chink in our armor so that your light could pour in and give us what we need, not just to survive but to thrive, because you created this beautiful, diverse earth, and we know that you called it good. Help us to claim our original blessing so that we may be a blessing to others. In the name and in the Spirit of Jesus the Christ, we pray and we say together, Amen. Well, we've been working on this the sermon series, and today I'm going to focus on respect and care for the community of life, and I'm going to do it in a fairly unique way, one that I had not anticipated or planned, but it's one of those things I call God things. So you know that we've been using this book by Larry Rasmussen called Earth Honoring Faith, Religious Ethics in a New Key. Well, it just so happens that I spent the past week at Camp Adams, which is our conference camp over in Malala, Oregon, for the Discoverers Camp, and that's students going into the fifth and sixth grade, so students who are anywhere between the age of 10 and 12. And I kid you not, I did not know when I signed up in February what the theme for the Discoverers Camp was going to be. And several weeks ago, I discovered that it was going to be stewardship of the earth. Now, could I have planned that any better? Did I plan it? It's a God thing. And thank God, because I can build my sermon around this past week, and you'll understand why that's so helpful in just a minute. As the chaplain at the camp, every week there's a chaplain, I had two major responsibilities. The first was to meet with the group, all of the campers, and there were 44 of them, and I used one of the halos from our Christmas pageant and explained that there are certain times that are sacred when we need to call our attention to what God might be saying to us. I'm a Rev, that's why I've got Rev on my, it doesn't mean I'm better than you, it doesn't mean I'm closer than you to God, it means I've been called out to do certain things, and teaching is one of them. They're all, you know, they're going, 44 kids in Trinity Hall, by the way, which is a gym. I'm not quite sure the significance of Trinity and gym, but I'll let you think about that. Yes, but why it's the gym? Yeah, why they elected a gym? So that was my one responsibility was to spend 10 or 15 minutes introducing the scripture for the day and the guiding question for the day. And the other primary responsibility was planning Vespers, which happens in the evening at 7 o'clock, and we all walk up to the chapel, which is in a separate area, and believe it or not, 10-year-olds through 12-year-olds can practice silence. It's a little dicey, and it isn't perfect, but to walk across the bridge over the stream to get up to the chapel was the no-talk zone. So those are my two primary responsibilities. There was a significant difference between what I thought I was going to be doing and what I actually did, and partly because there were four fewer staff people than anticipated. So you can imagine that there was some shifting of responsibilities, and what I had been told was you're going to have a chunk of 2 to 3 hours in the middle of the day where you can work on you can do what you need to do. And I'm thinking, oh, that's really terrific. Well, there were some actual responsibilities. Yes, there was jumping into the water with kids because I was double dared, and I just couldn't resist the double dare. Then, as you might imagine, there were those who were counting how many times I jumped, and who did I jump with? Oh, can we jump with you? And then there was wearing goofy hats. Could one of the ushers turn off the lights that are right? It might be a little easier to see. It's hard to see that, but that's the halo, but there's little Miss Piggy is sitting on top of my head. This is definitely out of my comfort zone. And this woman right here is Pam, and she's from Lake Oswego, and she was the director of the camp, and this is Natalie Becker, and she's one of the camp managers. And it was funky hat day or crazy hair day or something. And then there was the campfire time in the evening, where there are all kinds of songs that most everybody knows, except, as you can see, the chaplain, who is clearly lost. And then there was the rest of the staff. I assumed that my role as chaplain was going to be mostly with the campers. But I discovered when four of the staff didn't show up, there was a lot of drama. There was a lot of concern. Legitimately so. How are we going to manage these activities that we have planned? I also spent at least 45 minutes every night helping with the transition from boy energy to sleep energy. And I also spent some time with the first day in particular when there were some very unhappy campers who were missing their families. One little girl sitting beside me at campfire just started crying her head off. And I looked at her, and I didn't know her name, so I looked at her name tag. Name was River. And I said, "River, what's the matter?" "I have an owie." "Oh, where is it?" "I don't know." "Are you homesick?" "No, I'm not." "Do you want to go see the nurse?" "No." So I just sat there with my arm around her, and after about 10 or 15 minutes, it subsided. The owie went away, and at the end of the campfire, she came up and gave me a hug and said, "Oh, that was just what I needed." So there was a major shift in my expectations, needless to say. I had thought I would get a jump on the worship series for the fall, which is outside my own little world. Well, isn't that ironic, isn't it? I thought I was going to get this all done, and I had to step outside of my own little world. And I thought, oh, there'd be time for me to enjoy the woods and be quiet and have some meditation time and get caught up on my reading and have my sermon all ready for this morning. Nada. My wife even said, "Well, you did take, I know that you took the Motorcycle Diaries movie with you. Did you at least get to see that?" Nope. And here were the guiding questions that we had each day. What is stewardship? And this isn't typically churchy folks think stewardship's about money. This was all about care of earth, self, and others. That's what the stewardship theme was about. And so the first day we talked about what is stewardship, and then why is stewardship important? How can I do good through stewardship? How can I learn from the wisdom of others? And how can I practice stewardship in my home, in my school, and in my neighborhood? I lift these up because these are good guiding questions for us no matter how old we are. Right? And this is how the plan worked. If you look over here, here's the daily schedule. So I was involved from 8 o'clock until what they don't say down here is lights out at 10:30. So there are interest groups, there are trust groups, there are opportunities to engage with activities that all reinforce the question of the day. And there was always a new quote of the day. And this one's from Arthur Ashe: "I just wanted to make a difference, however small, in the world." Hey, and I discovered that there are some challenges of living in community 24/7. Can I get a witness on that? Have you ever gone on vacation with somebody and wished maybe you hadn't done it? Especially if it lasts for a week? This is what I call forced community. There's a huge range of preferences and need on sleep and food and quiet and energy and activity and interests. What I want and need versus what the community wants and needs. This was most clear at dinner time, or snack time, or dessert time, when it felt like all of the teaching I'd done about stewardship sort of disappeared in the frantic shark frenzy for the biggest brownie. Yes. But yet, there was opportunity to teach, and even the campers themselves would say, "Hey, we got to make sure everybody has a brownie before anybody has seconds." That's stewardship. The belief systems are very different. There are kids who go to church a lot and kids who wouldn't know church if it hit them over the head. So there's a huge range in what you can expect. I discovered that fairly early when I was talking about communion, and some of them looked at me like they had no idea what I was talking about because they didn't have any idea what I was talking about. And then there's the herd mentality. Do I need to say any more about that? There's kind of a momentum thing that happens, you know, and the energy feeds on itself. And before you know it, all kinds of things are happening, some of them good and some of them less. But there are blessings of being in 24/7 community. And here are a couple of them. The innocence of 10 to 12-year-olds. Unfiltered honesty. My mommies are getting divorced. At first it hurt, but now I see it's better. My dad just got out of jail this week. I'm not sure what it's going to be like when I get home. There are 9 kids in my family. 7 of them are foster children. I live with my grandmother. My parents don't get along very well. Do you know that there's sacredness in having those deepest, most significant events? You don't have to be a chaplain to do that, but you all know that. And then these amazing open-ended questions like, are you okay? It looks like somebody hit you on the head because I have a birthmark right here, right? And so it gave me an opportunity to say, this is a birthmark that I got when I was born because the doctor had to use tongs to help pull me out, and they're getting a little, that's getting a little squeamish. And I said, but you know what? I consider it my beauty mark now because there's nobody else that has a mark just like this on the side of their head. I'm really glad it's not right here on my face, but they were kind of actually stunned by that. You think God's male or female? When did you want to know that you wanted to be a pastor? Are you having fun? Is your hair waterproof? I kid you not, I came up out of the water, and maybe they're not used to seeing gray-haired guys with chest hair, but it was just kind of dribbling off. This little boy said, I think your hair's waterproof. It's just kind of peeling right off. Then there was the, how old are you? That was a really, how old are you? I said 58. She looked at me, I kid you not, she said, you don't look a day over 49. Those are blessings, sisters and brothers. Is your hair waterproof? I'll never forget that. Whoopsie. Gee whiz. Oops. Oh, that was a bummer. Well, let me see if I can think of a couple more questions. Oh, we're back. Oh, okay. So there were blessings for sure. There were some surprises. Very little racial diversity. I don't know why I should be surprised by that, because Oregon isn't that racially diverse. Our church isn't that racially diverse. But I'll tell you, there was huge diversity in emotional IQ, in willingness to volunteer, in cooperation versus competition, and those who wanted to be recognized and those who really just wanted to be invisible. I bet if we looked around this community and asked people questions, we'd find some of those very similar realities. I was also stunned that some of these children would volunteer for things that they weren't the least bit gifted for. One of them volunteered to be the narrator, and I just assumed that this person would be a good reader, and they struggled over almost every single word, and here's another God thing. One of the good readers from the group during Vespers walked over unannounced or unasked and just started reading with her. You can't teach that kind of grace, but you can make room for it. And I get goosebumps just thinking about it. If given a safe environment, children will ask profound questions. They're much more sophisticated in their theological thinking than we give them credit for or even assume. Silly, goofy camp songs can grow on you if you let them. I got to tell you, that first night, fortunately, some of the campers didn't know them, and I looked at this one little girl at one time. I said, "Do you know what's going on?" She said, "No, I don't have a clue." I said, "Neither do I." She said, "Oh, well, maybe we can learn it together." So here are the takeaways. A tremendous amount of life skill learning happens in a condensed period of time. One of the most important life learning skills happened in the last day when we were asked to sit in a big circle, and we had to close our eyes, and then people from different cabins would come around and tap you on the shoulder if you were someone who you felt safe with, who you considered a friend, who you respected, who you thought was a good athlete, who you thought was caring. So as you're sitting there not looking, you're getting all this affirmation from people in the group, but you don't know exactly who it is. And everybody got a turn to be part of a group to give and receive affirmations. My biggest surprise was I'm a pretty good swimmer, and I was swimming around that swimming hole like crazy. So when it came to good athlete, I thought I'd get ding, ding, one, boom. Someone who you felt safe with, fortunately. Camp brings out the best and worst in us, probably just like church. Our UCC theology is alive and well at Camp Adams. This is a picture of a person who's connected to our congregation. His name was Ben Thornton when he was active, but Ben is now transitioning and has been for a couple of years and now goes by the name Azana. And it's just an amazing experience at camp to see Azana embraced, especially by people who didn't know when he was Ben. And if you've ever been around someone who's gone through the process of transitioning, there's a way in which I don't completely understand it, but there's an opening up and a sort of acknowledgement and a breathing that can happen because you don't have to pretend anymore. So takeaways continued. We're all tender and vulnerable. One of the kids who was kind of a little bit on the bullying side, I discovered that he really was bullying because he didn't think that he belonged there or anyone would like him. All of us are made smaller by fear and either too much or too little ego strength. Can I get a witness on that? Loving heals wounds and restores relationships. Acting out isn't always done as an attention-seeking behavior, although it is sometimes. It's not always. There is a huge range of physical and emotional control, but it can be learned. There was a kid who'd pushed my buttons all week, and in the last closing circle, the very last thing we're doing, We'd ask the kids, don't step on the rocks. We were gathered in the labyrinth. Please stay off the rocks in the labyrinth because they've been carefully put in there. Well, guess what? There's a boy standing beside me, and the first thing he's doing is pushing on those rocks. And I said, please don't do that. 3 seconds later, please don't do that. 5 seconds later, and I said, are you trying to push my buttons? And he said, no, it's just hard for me to stand still. So I'm assuming the whole time that he's doing it just to grab my chain, and he's doing it because he really is just fighting with every ounce of his energy to stay still, and he can't do it. The person who annoys you most may be your best teacher. I'm just saying things you already know, right? But it's a little bit like that book that the guy, everything you learned in kindergarten. I think it's great to be reminded of these things. And this is what joy looks like. This was the talent show. And there is a smiling face right here who's Alex Green. He was at camp. This little girl was a member of Kairos UCC, and she most enjoyed introducing me as the husband of her pastor. Oh, it just made her so happy. That's what joy looks like. Just a great group, great opportunity. I was way out of my comfort zone. I like to have things organized. I like to know what's expected. I like to have everything planned. I don't do well with chaos. So, you know what? I had to stretch a little bit this week. I'm glad that tomorrow's my day off. I said to one of the staff people, they said, "Oh, you get to go home now and relax." And I said, "Yeah, I get to go home now and write a sermon." And he looked at me and he said, "You really don't want to do that, do you?" And I said, "No, I just as soon stay in bed tomorrow, but I don't get that choice." But you know what? I enjoyed putting it together. I enjoyed thinking about what had happened because it really was a lifting up experience. My last comment is that God shows up. The first night we were reading, and this is another one of those things, we were reading a story at campfire, and it was about bats. And we had started reading, and about 5 minutes into the book, all of a sudden, bat, and another bat, and another bat, and they were just going all over the place. And Tuesday morning, I woke up, and I was thinking, I'm not sure I'm going to make it through this week. And I was looking out the windows at the admin camp, and it was about 7 o'clock in the morning, and all of a sudden, 3 white-tailed deer started dancing and playing in the very same field where the kids do their field games. And when I was a little boy, I would go hunting with my uncle for white-tailed deer, and they were giving the sign all over the place that, you know what, David, it's going to be okay. Look at me. Look at me. It's okay. You're going to be okay. I'm here. Then, for the night transition time, there was reading time, and one of the counselors, a wise old gal, was just excellent reading, and she was reading The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And every kid is going to get a copy of that book if they don't have one. It's a great, great story. And in our closing circle, while the little boy was nudging with the rocks and almost pushing me over the edge, we were singing a closing song, and it's the Phoenix song, and it talks about rising up as on eagle's wings, and I kid you not, at that moment, an eagle flew overhead, and we had not seen an eagle all week. Now, we could all say that's coincidence. I choose to believe that this was just the most profound way of saying, yes, we are so connected. We really need to be ego-less, or less ego and more ego-system-oriented. And that, sisters and brothers, is the good news for today. And take all of these wonderful thoughts, teachings, wonderings, takeaways, and live them. And the people are heard to say, Amen.